It's good to have a friend that I've got to know in recent days, Neil McMullen. He is the assistant pastor in the Elam Church in my own hometown, and I've got to know him, and you've heard his wife before, or you've met his wife before. She came and accompanied my sister, which she gave her testimony in the ladies' meeting a few months ago. But Neil's going to come and share a word of testimony just now. And so I'm going to ask him, please, Neil, just to come and feel at home. These are other members of the family that you've never met before, and we trust that you know God's help and blessing as you share God's story of his working in your life. Thanks, Neil.
Well, good evening, everyone. It is good to be with you. I have to say, when Trevor asked me what I come down to give him a testimony, I was delighted, but it suddenly struck me that it's been a long time from I've actually give my testimony. But I'm excited about that because I have a testimony to give, and that's always very good. I gave my life to the Lord at the age of 24, a young man with a lot of living to do. And if you'd have knew me in them days, you would have thought there was a man who's quite happy in his ways. The life and soul of the party, anything that was going on, I found myself in it. But yet, behind it all, and beneath it all, there was a great void. Before I start, I just want to share a wee bit of scripture. And it's from Psalm 63. I just want to read a few verses. It says, O God, you are my God, for early I will seek you. For my soul it thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water. So I have looked for you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory. But because of your love and kindness, or because your love and kindness is better than life, my lips shall praise you. Thus I will bless you while I live. I will lift up my hands in your name. I thank God for that. I just want to thank Trevor and Esther for having us down here, and of course the church for allowing us to come down here. As a young boy, I lived in Armagh. That was my hometown. And up until that point, up to the age of 8 years of age, I was quite a happy young man. All was as normal as it could be for a young man at that age. But what is quite common nowadays, sadly, wasn't just as common when I was a young boy at 8 years of age. My mother and father, they went their separate ways. And I have to say, that was a devastating part within my life. I remember hearing my mother cry at night. I never seen my father for years, although he was there. He might as well not have been there, if that makes sense. If I ever needed any advice or help, he was too busy in his carefree way of living. But regardless, I did what most young men and men even yet do, put on great fronts, don't we? We build them up and we stand strong, we hold our heads high, and we get on with it. The problem was I was 8. And I shouldn't have been doing such things. I remember going to school and being embarrassed because I had wee dinner tickets that the government gave us because we couldn't afford to buy our dinners. Although I have to say, when I come to high school, they were a bit more common, and we used to sell them to buy our fags. Such is the way of the transgressor. But anyhow, but I don't want to deceive you. I had a loving home, a loving mother, a father who was just caught up in the world. A father that thought the grass was greener on the other side. And listen, if you're feeling like that tonight, don't let the enemy deceive you. The grass is no greener on the other side. By the age of 14 or thereabouts, I knew what it was to lose an uncle at 23 through drink. He fell and he hit his head and we buried him. I knew what it was to have a sister buried at 1.5. At the age of 16, I had drank myself silly. But bear in mind, as a happy young man, I loved chasing the girls, and boy did they run. I loved going out and about and having a good laugh. Listen, I wasn't walking about with my head down. I enjoyed my life. But a strange thing happened. My brother got saved. My oldest brother got saved. And can I just say, he was a bit of a mess of a one, because you know why? He couldn't handle the break up that well. He was a bit older. He probably missed it a bit more. He probably knew a bit more. I was still quite young and probably was naive. But he wasn't that great of handling it. And his life was a wee bit chaotic. But I noticed this great change in this man's life. He had a girlfriend who was he was with for years, and next thing I know, he was married to her, and they were having children together, and they were happy. His family seemed to be not dysfunctional as much. There seemed to be just order in the chaos. Although I mocked him regularly every Sunday as he poured out the juices, that holy water, I'd say to him, just mocking him, taunting at him. But there was something deep within me that knew that man had been changed. I didn't understand it, but I knew there was something. He would have invited me regular to Armagh Elam. Anything was on, I'd been asked to come. And, you know, I was a soft-hearted fella, and thankfully still I am. I didn't want to offend him. And so I would have went a few times. I remember going, and to my own shame, I was slightly hungover. And I have to say, I was glad when I heard the amen at the end of the meeting, because not only was I ready to get out, but I was thirsty, because that's the way I lived my life. But you know, I heard from God in them days. And I remember sitting there, and I could hear God speak. I remember sitting and trembling in the seats. But I did what I always did. I got up, and I walked out, and I left, went on about my business. But you know, I had no father figure in my life, as I said. And I followed the crowd. Do you know, if anybody asked me to do anything, I would never say no. Anything dangerous, I ploughed on. Anything stupid, I did it. I suppose in many ways I was a class clown, but the mates that I rung about were tight fighters. So I got a reputation by them. Can I tell you this? If they weren't there, I wasn't out. But you know, I got on with my life. And you know what happened next, you'll not believe, is my father got saved. You know where he got saved? He got arrested. He had a great job. And had he not got in himself in a bit of trouble, he'd have been sitting today with a great pension. But he got himself involved with the normal stuff. You know all about it. And he says to the Lord, he got down on his knees and says, Lord, if you get me out of this mess, I'll give my life to you. And friends, he got out the next day. And he shouldn't have got out. And here he come, and he told us the story. And of course we thought, dead on, give you a day or two, maybe a week, you'd be back to your old ways, but that's the nature of the man, isn't it? He's still saved today to the glory of God. And can I just say this, we've got a great relationship. Thanks be to God. We talk regular, we get on regular. We spend many weekends down in his house, because God unites families, even though the world would seek to divide them. But then it come back to me. I was still living this life of no direction, of carnal living. But you know, the way of the transgressor is a strange road, because it doesn't matter how many humps and knocks you get. It doesn't matter how low in the gutter you find yourself. You seem to call it life. I knew it was to lay my own puke. Excuse my terminology, but I just want to be real with you tonight. I remember praying on the mall after I'd been so drunk and I was trying to be sick and I couldn't get a breath. I remember saying, Lord, if you get me out of this, I'll give my life to you. Where did that come from? And the Lord got me out of it and I was straight back in the pub the next day. The transgressor. I found myself working in a place called Clean Hardware. And the man who owned that was a brethren man and is a brethren man. And if ever any run-ins with a brethren man and women, you know you're not going to escape their presence without knowing you need to be saved. But I can tell you this. I used to go into work on the Saturday morning hanging. Totally hanging. Maybe only home 3 hours prior. And he was a grumpy bit of a man. But he would have brought me into the house. Give me a cup of tea and a boiled egg. And a tablet. And sent me into the wee shed sorting out sewer fittings. Out of the roads I couldn't get knocked over. And if I went to his church on the Sunday, I was a blessed boy on the Monday. But if I didn't go on the Sunday, boy, I knew it. Shoveling cement all day, brushing the aisle yard. And that's the truth. And I thank God for him. And he told me plainly, young man, you need to be saved. Young man, you need to be saved. And I went on about my life. And there's so much in between. At the age of 18, I found myself fathering a young baby. And there I was, a young reckless man, with no follow-through, no accountability, no direction over this wee life. I'm going to say this, I was a fool of a man. I still drank every weekend. You know something? In them days, I was convinced that this world was all about me. Yep, all about me. I was convinced that nobody else, even you, mattered, because it was all about me. But the Lord's a great way of humbling us, hasn't he? Well, gradually, I felt this superior authority that I thought I had slip away. I remember this. I'd started a small business at that stage, and I remember everything I touched seemed to fall to pieces. Financially, friends. I remember even going out getting drunk, and it didn't even satisfy. I started falling out with friends who were close friends, because the Lord started to work. Well, I find myself sitting in Armagh Elam. Sorry, I'll bring you back to another mission. A mission run by the Free Presbyterian Church on the Portland Road, 5 years before I got saved. I remember this top loyalist from Market Hill that was renowned and well known. There he was standing, clothed and in a sound mind and saved and giving his testimony. And I remember standing looking at that man, and I knew this man, and this wasn't the same man. And me and my best friend, we were sitting there and we were hanging, because he worked for a free pea man and he had to go to his meeting, so I had to go with him there. He would have got in trouble on the Monday. So we found ourselves in this tent meeting and we were sitting shaking with the tires of a hangover. And you know what that man says to me, my mate? He says, "Will we get saved tonight?" And I says, "I'm not getting saved, not ready. I'm not getting saved." And he didn't get saved that night. So there we were. 5 years down the line, I found myself at 24 years of age, full of life, but I'd lost my bite. Yes, I still went out. I still did what I did, but I was empty, and I was hollow. And an alcoholic man who had fell off a roof and was paralyzed from the waist down in a wheelchair says to me at my 18th birthday in a pub, because that's what we do, our 18th birthdays, when you're in that sort of way, you have it in a pub. He says to me, "You've been about a long time. At 18, you've been about a long time. I should have had my first pint, legally." But I found myself fighting with the Lord. I found myself not understanding the cross of Calvary, but I found myself running from God. And I used to go to them meetings, and I can assure you, I exaggerate not, that I left as if God had just spoke to me and me alone. And I had a hard heart. Remember, I was telling you when I was 8, I started building the fronts up. I built and I built and I built, that nothing in this world could affect me. I seen a man blew up in a car and rolling down the hill on my way to school. And I walked on. I can remember seeing his hands yet. And I walked on to school, and it never did anything to me, because I was numbified to the world. But I felt God breaking down them barriers. One night in Armagh Elam, as I come walking out, this wee woman met me, the call to the weeping prophet, because all she done was cry and pray to the Lord. And she says to me, "I've been praying for you." Fudge is my nickname, by the way. Don't be telling anybody in Monaghan that. She says, "Fudge, I've been praying for you." And I stood there, which I thought I was a hard lad, to run about with hard people in hard places. And I stood my ground, and inside I wanted to cry. And this woman says to me, she was this height, "I've been praying for you." And she walked on with her Bible. And that's the first time I felt this heart shatter. Although I never let on. Don't despise prayer. Don't be afraid to tell people, no matter how hard they look or act, that you're praying for them. Because that's when it started to change my life. I started going to church because part of me wanted to hear from God again. And I would sit there and I would hear the preacher speak, and I would just feel my inside shake. Because the Bible's alive and it's real and it's active. But I walked out one time too often. I nearly gave my life. I spoke to a man of God, a minister, and I sat in his study and did everything but confess, and I left and never went near the church again. Never went back. that I come until Boxing Day 2002. There'd been a family in Armagh that was renowned. They were tight sort of people. You don't mess with them. And one of the younger brothers had attacked one of my younger brothers one night in the bar. And of course, me and the other brother had run-ins for a couple of years. But remember I told you about my mates? They were big. So every time they were drunk, they would start the fight, and we would fight, and then when they were sober, they would offer their handshake. But this day had come, and Boxing Day, and there was a big disco on in this pub. And there this family was, and my family happened to be there, and my mother was there. And this man said something to me, and I knew what he said to me wasn't aggressive. It wasn't worthy of an argument. But I was empty. And I drew out to my shame. And I just want to say this man would clean me up the street. This man is not somebody you would mess with. But I was crying out. But I did it anyhow. And you know what happened next? The place erupted. I remember lying on the floor and a headlock, somebody had me in a headlock, and I remember seeing the man grab the instruments and he ran out the door and there was a bloodbath. And I thought it was normal. But you know what wasn't normal? My wee mother's face. She stood there ashamed of her son. Because I had, yet again, not only embarrassed myself, but embarrassed her. Because that's the way of the transgressor. Can I just say you tonight? Don't go round in circles, in and out of the pit, making the same mistakes. Christian, don't make the same mistakes. Deal with them. And man up. And that's what I did. I walked out, and I put my back against the wall, and I slid down it. And I said, Lord, if you exist. I do want to know the ironic thing. A friend of mine who got saved, John Bloomer, rang me up and asked me to go to church that very day. And I says, I tell you what, mate, come you out with me. Come on you out with me today, and I'll go out with you tomorrow to church. And he did. And this man seen it all. He witnessed it all. But he brought me home. That Sunday I get up and I says to myself, I'm going to church because the Lord's speaking to me. And you know what happened when I got into the service and the preacher began to speak? I heard nothing. Yes, he was speaking, but the Lord never spoke to me. I never got convicted. Absolutely nothing happened. And I went home and I sat down in my chair by myself. I was sitting in a house that I'd bought empty, just myself, and stale milk in the fridge. And I rattled my fingers in the chair. And the work was done. Now, I needed confirmation, but I know now, as a mature Christian, that the work was done. I surrendered this life that I had. I had come to a point in my life where I'd heard enough about God, and I was ready that I was going to trust Him. And I did. And I rang my mate, and he brought me over to the elder of Elam's, a man of Seamus Burke. Ironically, a Catholic man, converted to the glory of God. And I was brought up not to hate Catholics, but in the environment that was normal. My wee granny, God love her, used to say, Neil, if you were born a Catholic, you'd hate the Protestants. And she was right. I had no reason to hate the Catholics, but yet here I was in a converted Catholic's house. And he says to me, what do you want me to do? I says, I need to get saved. He says, well, you have to do that. And he led me in a prayer, friends. And for 3 days, you know that wee voice that speaks to us, gives us advice and direction? You know what I heard? What have you done? What have you done for 3 days? I believe it's the old demons being cast out of me. I'm not a hyper-spiritualist. I don't spend my time casting out demons. No. But I know the voices that used to direct my life have changed. And so it was. 24 years of age, I gave my life to the Lord. A young man at 24 who felt that there was nothing left in life to do but die because I'd done it all. I wonder, do you feel like that tonight? Have you come to a part in your life where you just think, what is the point? Do you know, before I started something, I could have it worked out in my head and know the end. Have you ever witnessed that? Because I know the results. I've tried it all. But here I found something that satisfied. I found a peace. I remember reading the Bible one day, and I never told anybody, but an awful concern about where my wee sister was, because she's a baby. Who's looking after her? Do you know the wee story about David and Bathsheba, the wee baby? King David stood up after fasting and pleading to the Lord to save the child, and the Lord didn't save the child. But he got up and he combed his hair, and he sat up and he had a meal. And of course the old servants couldn't understand this. And he said this, "The child isn't coming back to me, but where the child is, I can go." And the Lord there gave me a peace. That was my first bit of peace in my soul. I knew that where my sister was, one day we'll stand together. But you know something? I come through school, not an exam, didn't cure, hard lad. I went through life with my hands working to earn money and throwing it over to the counter to the pub. And you know, if you're a drinker tonight and you're listening, can I just share with something that I seen a few weeks ago? I drove past what used to be my local pub. It was a Sunday evening. I was coming back from Monaghan, and there was this man being pushed away by the man who owned the pub. I know him. And that man would have walked into that bar sober, with a right mind and a wallet full of money. And here he was, I would say, broke. In a drunken, broken state, being pushed out by the very man that took his money. Oh, how foolish was I, and how foolish are you. But my job here tonight is simply this, to testify. Although I didn't understand the fullness of that cross, I didn't understand what it meant that Christ died for me and that by his blood that my sins can be washed away. I didn't understand that. But I understood this, that if I called out on the name of the Lord, he would save me. I had no father, you know what that meant? I had no backbone. I had no follow through. I was afraid of things. I met my wife, Julianne. And you know, we prayed one night together, and you laugh at this, although she didn't. She choked in the middle of the prayer. She was a great help to me, you see. She helped me get my mind straightened out. I got a prophecy over my life one night, you know. It wasn't a great one. It was a man spoke, and he says to me, "The Lord's told me that your life is like a ball of string. But slowly he's doing like this, and he's getting the mess out." And you know, that was of the Lord, because that's how I felt. And my wife, she was like my counsellor and my best friend. And slowly, she put up with some nonsense, friends. Oh, I was gloriously saved, but I was gloriously messed up for them few years. And we prayed together one night, and I says, "Lord, thank you for this tool that you've sent." And I can say she wasn't amused for referring to her as a tool, but she knows what I meant. She was a tool that the Lord sent to change me, to make me the man that he wanted me to be. And that process is still going on. An uneducated drunkard, I felt a call to serve the Lord. Not because I thought the job was eloquent. Certainly not because it's well paid. Because the Lord done a radical transformation in my life. And you know, friends, if I had to go through the ministry every week without that transformation in my life, I don't think I could. But I can. I look at people's lives and I know that one word from the Lord and they're transformed. I look at broken Christians and I know that one word from the Lord and a fire in their belly will raise up again. 3 times in the 1 week, 3 different men come and handed me a promise from the Lord. Being confident of this very thing, that he who began that good work in you will be sure to finish it until the day of Jesus Christ. See, because I had no father to lean on. I was afraid to do anything because I had no confidence in myself. And I felt that I wasn't even saved. Do you feel like that tonight? I felt not only was not even saved, that I was useless, of no purpose. But boy, I can stand boldly and hopefully humbly this day and say to you, listen, friends, I have not maintained anything. But from the day and hour I give my life on to the Lord, He has kept me. And He'll keep you. Yeah, there's days you feel like giving up. I'm sure our brother Trevor hasn't experienced them days in ministry, but I can assure you I have. Yep. I'm a young man yet. I don't want to try and impart wisdom, but I'll say this. A wee word of encouragement goes a long way to your minister. A wee word of encouragement. If you want the fire to fall from this pulpit, you need to get behind the man that's on it. Even if you don't fully agree with his ways, maybe you want them to be your ways, but that's not the way it is. But I rejoice today that I found myself in ministry. And I'm what's called a minister in training at MIT. And what that means is that I can make mistakes and say I'm an MIT and get away with it. Our brother can't. He has to take the fall. But friends, I went to the college. Had to go to the Baptist. Excuse me. Had to go to the Baptist to get founded, or founded, as the wife calls it. Founded is not a word, apparently. Had to get founded on the word. So I went to the Baptist. And I did indeed. But if I tell you this, I didn't know how to spell essay. You might be just as funny. Never read a book. My life. Thanks be to God, you're not getting me out of it. And I can spell essay, I think. I know what it is to seek the Lord. I know what it is to stand here and know that I am a sinner saved by grace. I stand here knowing that I am no bigger nor smaller than any one of you nor anybody across that road or down that road. I know what it is, as I've said, to lie on my own filth. But I know what it is to praise the name of the Lord today. I'm now 37. I don't know this last 13, whatever years have went. But I know one thing. I've made a decision that all that I do, to try and do for the glory of God. Because it's quite broad, the Christian walk, isn't it? So I've laid that wee line for myself. Neil, if you don't know what to do, just glorify the Lord in it. You can do no more. And some decisions you make, they're not just right. I want to just close with a couple of scriptures. Psalm 51. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to your love and kindness, according to the multitude of your tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledged my transgressions. Friends, my journey with the Lord started that night when I acknowledged my transgressions. I realized that inside me there is no good thing. And I still realize that. If you want to stand before God and justify your life, I can assure you that I'll not be standing beside you. And what I mean is this, that when it comes to that day where we stand before God, and if it were that I was asked, young McMullen, what gives you the merit to enter into my Father's house? I would say simply this, I have nothing that I could offer you of any worth. There's nothing that I have done, even though I might think is righteous, would ever warrant me to enter in. But I've simply trusted in your Son. Yeah, it's Him who I stand on. It's Him who I stand beside, not my big mates now, but the Lord. So I have nothing to offer other than I put all my trust in Him, and that's it. That's the gospel. If you don't know the Lord tonight, put your trust in Him. Doesn't matter if you can spell essay or not. Doesn't. It doesn't matter if you're messed up, if your life's a ball of string, because He will untangle it. I'm looking at that clock, and I don't know how long I've been here, but it's time I was off. But listen, I trust there's something in that has been a blessing. I hope I've been real with you. I hope that you know that above all things, I've met the Lord and he's transformed my life. And I'll hand over to you now, brother. God bless you, and thank you for your time. Bless you.